Going Linux, episode 232, Computer America, number 69. Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy. Whether you are new to Linux, upgrading from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about moving to Linux, this podcast will provide you with valuable information and advice that will help you in Going Linux. We hope that you'll find this and all our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and its applications and using them to get things done. In today's episode, Computer America.
Broadcasting live, it's America's longest-running national radio talk show on computers, Computer America, hosted by national columnist Craig Crossman. Woo-hoo! Look for Craig's weekly column in your favorite newspaper. This show is being beamed nationwide at ComputerAmerica.com. Keep it here for technology news, computer products, guest interviews, and your phone calls. You're listening to Computer America.
Hello, and welcome into the Computer America show. It's the nation's longest-running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. Computer America is heard around the world and coast to coast. And I'm your host, Craig Crossman.
And I'm your co-host, certified ethical hacker, Charles Tendell.
Hey! Well, so how was your Martin Luther King Day?
It was good. It was good. It's always great to be born on similar days to a great man like that.
Yes. Awesome. Exactly. And it was your birthday, too.
It was. It was awesome.
So you had a happy birthday, I take it?
Well, it's funny, actually. Everybody goes, you know, what do you do for your birthday? And, you know, everybody's like, do the things that make you happy. I actually own a company, and my company makes me very, very happy. So I went to work that day.
A little happy birthday music there for you.
Oh, man, I should turn the camera off. I'm in my birthday suit.
You're in your birthday? No, I don't. We don't want that. This is a family-friendly show. And
family friendly. What kind of family?
Family friendly.
Depends on what kind of family. Have you watched Game of Thrones?
Not the Manson family.
Oh, that's it could even worse.
Exactly. But anyhow, it's a Tuesday edition of the Computer America Show. Hope you had a nice long weekend and are now thoroughly rested and relaxed and ready to talk computers and talk tech. And that's what we do here on Computer America. We do that every...
Oh, wait, I think I'm in the wrong place.
Yeah, Monday through Friday, we do this here at on the show. And have a lot of fun doing it. Anyhow, it is the third Tuesday of the month, and of course that means it's our All Linux Show!
Or, as I like to call it, the operating system that all us cool people use.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, I'm sure my guests will agree with you 1,000% there. The Linux operating system, of course, is a... It's becoming much more popular. It's an important operating system. So every month, we have decided to devote an entire Computer America show to the subject of Linux. Okay? So if you have a Linux question, you know, obviously tonight's the night for you to give us a call and joining in with us. Now, joining us is our Linux expert, Larry Bushy. Larry is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. Larry, welcome into Computer America. How are you?
I am wonderful. I'm feeling great. I'm looking forward to another wonderful show after a long weekend. I'm ready to go.
All right.
Now, outstanding.
Disengage tape, and now here's Larry. I'm glad that you had a nice, relaxing weekend. And, of course, we're going to... Now, here's what we do. I kind of fill you in, give you the scoop, so... If you're listening to this for the first time, if you're listening to the show for the first time, where have you been? We're on the air 23 years! 23 years, and you're just now joining us. Well, okay.
I blame Craig.
I know. Anyhow, if you are listening to us for the first time, let's tell you how you can join in on the conversation. Because any question you have about Linux, we're here to help you. And just give us a call. It's 347-884-8881. That's 347-884-8881. I'll get you on and get you through. We also have an email address set up when we're live and on the air. You know, if you don't want to go on the air, if you're radio shy, but you still have a question for us or our guest, it's live, L-I-V-E, at computeramerica.com. Now, as I said, we asked Larry to give us a topic, and tonight's topic is, should I dual boot Linux with Windows or Mac? And when Charles saw that topic, he says, oh, that's a good one. So and it is. It's a good question. Should I dual boot Linux with Windows and Mac? I'm going to be talking about that. But again, if you have any question about Linux, we certainly welcome your call. Now, I do see we have a caller.
Oh, wow. That was fast.
Yeah, well, even before that, but I believe this is the gentleman that asked you the Bitcoin question from Rochester. But let's just see if he has a Linux question. If not, I think he just wants to call in and listen. But, hey, is this Stu? Computer America? Craig, how are you?
Yes, hi. How's it going? You know, it's kind of crazy because I've been wanting to know about Linux all day today. It's like God put us together.
It was meant to be.
It was meant to be. Now, here's my question. I've been wanting to play with an operating system. I don't know which one to pick. There's Unix, Linux, and Ubuntu. Now, can you tell me, in terms of Linux, I think that's the one I want to play with because it's open source. Can I put all my programs on there, like Photoshop, Macromedia, Dreamweaver, and all that type of stuff on there?
Well, the short answer is...
have it run like a Windows?
Yeah, the short answer is you can have it run like Windows, but you can't install those particular programs.
You can't install them specifically.
Yeah, so you can't. Yeah, you can't install them directly on Linux. And the reason for that is, just like you can't take the programs that are designed to run on Windows and run them on a Mac, on the Mac operating system, on OS X directly, it's the same thing with Linux. You can't take a program designed to run on Windows and run it directly on Linux. Now, there are ways to run some Windows programs on Linux, but generally speaking, you don't have to do that. You can use other programs that do the same thing. So, Photoshop. So, with Photoshop, one of the things that many people like to use, even on Windows, if they can't afford Photoshop, or they don't, maybe they can afford it, they just don't want to fork over the money, there's a program called the GIMP, G-I-M-P, and that is an open source photo editing program that has many of the features that Photoshop does. And I know semi-professional photographers and even professional photographers that use the GIMP rather than use Photoshop simply because Photoshop is much, much more expensive. And, you know, if you have two computers, you've got a Windows computer and a Mac computer, you've got two different versions of the same program, it gets to be a big mess. So, there are Linux alternatives for just about any Windows software you have out there or Mac software that you have out there. And we've talked about them here on the show as well. And we've got some links on our website. And within the next couple of days, as a matter of fact, we have an article going up on our website that lists some of the most popular software that is installed on Linux computers in a business environment. So things like office suites and photo editors and video production software and things like that. So stay tuned for that. We've got some good stuff coming up on that.
Let me just comment that. So basically what Larry is saying is that there are comparable alternatives. Unless the company writes their program for Linux specifically, it's not going to run in Linux. But there are so many free alternatives, like, for example, GIMP, which is basically the Photoshop alternative that runs
right.
The Linux operating system. So not only are you saving you're saving an enormous amount of money, because we all know with Photoshop, you know, those are hundreds of dollars, and you're not bound by this new cloud version that they're forcing. Adobe is basically going to the cloud, and most all of their applications are going to be cloud-based. So you don't have to worry about that. You can actually have the program running on your computer. It will read all the Photoshop files directly. I mean, you can actually bring Photoshop files you've created in Photoshop, or somebody sends you a Photoshop file, GIMP will read those.
Yep.
Same thing with Microsoft Office. I mean, if you're using Word or Excel or any of the programs that you find in Office, there is LibreOffice, I believe, is the one that's the current one.
Right.
LibreOffice is a Microsoft Office compatible full implementation of the program, and you can bring those Office documents directly into LibreOffice. It'll read them directly.
Right, and the other thing you can do with a lot of the open source alternatives, the GIMP and OpenOffice, or excuse me, LibreOffice being two examples of this, they have versions for Windows as well as versions for Linux. And those Windows versions, and many of them have versions for Mac as well. So you can use exactly the same program on all three operating systems and all three platforms if you wish.
I didn't even know that, so that's nice.
Yeah.
So what do you think, Tu?
So you could actually save, using GIMP, save the file back out as a Photoshop file or Libre. Can you open up an XLS file and save it back as an XLS file for the Office world? No, you can't.
My primary machine, everything I do on, is a Linux Mint box, and one of my favorite distributions. And once you get into the world, you'll understand between the different what a distro is. But you got to be careful. So GIMP, while it will read a PSD, a Photoshop, whatever it's called, file, it doesn't have the same layering and everything else in it. So you can open it, but you might not see it the way that you want. There are ways to run Photoshop on Linux, but that's kind of for a slightly more advanced user doing it. So starting off might not be the best bet, and you might actually fall into the category of what our show topic is, which is the dual boot, because you're still going to want to be able to run your Windows stuff alongside or within Linux, or even run Linux itself within a virtual machine. Because what it sounds like to me is you've got are you a graphics artist?
Yes.
The first thing you asked us was does it run Photoshop? And you know, I use Photoshop for the one-off photos, and I have found ways to get around that on my Linux machines. Sometimes I bounce back and forth. You know, it was the only real reason I had a Windows VM at one point, but you know, I got some other things going, and I actually got it to where I could run Photoshop in Linux. But you know, people don't typically say, I want to switch operating systems, so I'm an advanced user, but I need Photoshop. In this particular case, I think GIMP, it's going to be a learning curve. It's a very powerful tool. It can do a lot of the same things in Photoshop, but it's not laid out the same, and it might require you to learn a whole new photo editing software. So I'd recommend doing the dual boot thing.
Right. And what you said, Charles, is absolutely correct about Photoshop, in that it's not going to allow you to save back, or the GIMP isn't going to allow you to save back in a Photoshop format. Excel, on the other hand, and LibreOffice. LibreOffice will open Excel files, both the XLS version and the XLSX version, the most recent version, and it will save back to those formats. Same thing with the word processor. Now, some of the formatting on graphics sometimes gets messed up on the PowerPoint equivalent in LibreOffice, so you need to be watchful there as well. But getting back to the GIMP for a second, one of the reasons you use this kind of software is to develop some sort of graphic that you then export in a different format, whether that's a PNG file or a GIF file or a JPEG file. And you can do all of that with the GIMP just exactly the same way you can do that with Photoshop. So it has the same power. It's the formatting of the file itself that's different between the two programs. So that's what you need to be careful of. But in the case of the Office suites, it's not perfect, but it's much, much more compatible. When I was taking my MBA, the school required Microsoft Office, and I used the older version of LibreOffice, OpenOffice, through the entire thing, and had absolutely no compatibility issues at all.
Yep.
There you go. Okay.
Now, one last question, please. Linux looks so much like OS X. Now, is it similar in the fact that it's hard for Linux to get a virus like on a Mac system also?
Yep.
Yes, absolutely. And you mentioned three things when you first asked your question. You mentioned Unix, you mentioned Linux, and you mentioned Ubuntu. And both
kind of in its own category.
Yeah. So OS X and Linux and Ubuntu, using the terminology you used, are all based on Unix. So Unix is kind of the great granddaddy of everything other than Windows. And as a result, when you're Charles, there's other stuff out there, but come on, don't want to complicate this for the poor guy.
I was
going to
say Windows even stole from some Unix stuff. But
I know. So anyway, Unix is the great granddaddy, and it's probably not something you want to try to install on your computer unless you're running a web server for the internet. However, Linux is, as you mentioned, it's open source, and there are various versions of Linux. It does look like OS X. Many of the versions look like OS X, but you'll find versions out there that look like Windows, some others that don't look like anything other than their own thing, like Ubuntu. Ubuntu is actually a version of Linux. It is a version of Linux that has gotten some heavy advertising, and as a result, it's kind of made a brand name for itself, but it is a version of Linux. What Charles mentioned, Linux Mint is another version of Linux.
But they can put skins on these things, so that if you want to make it look like a Mac, you can make it look like a Mac, or you can make it look like Windows. You can add skins to these things. So.
Right. And Ubuntu even has, you know, that upper bar at the top, the menu bar with the icons on the right-hand side that show you your wireless if you're on a laptop, and the power icon and all that sort of stuff. It looks almost identical, if not identical, to what appears on OS X, and there's a good reason for that. It's all based on the same Unix platform from the great granddaddy Unix.
Okay, Tim. I hope that answers your question. And
thank you so much.
And
you're very welcome.
You don't have to stay connected. You can still listen to the show at the Blog Talk Radio website. You don't have to call in to listen to the program, right?
Yes. Thanks.
Okay, take care. Bye. All right. Okay. It is 347-884-8881, 347-884-8881. We'll get you on and get you through. But let's get started because we have a lot to talk about. And we asked the question, should I dual boot Linux with Windows or Mac? And why don't we start off with that, Larry?
Sure. Well, you can take that either way. You could take it, should I dual boot with another operating system?
Mm-hmm.
Or you could read the question, should dual booting be done with Windows or with Mac? So we can address it either way. What I really meant when I put this topic together was, should I be dual booting at all, and whether it's with Windows or with Mac, and what is dual booting about, and how do I go about doing that? So why don't we start with the first question, which is, what is dual booting, for those who haven't been listening to us for 23 years and the 6 years that I've been on?
it's when you have one beer in one hand and another beer in the other hand.
Right.
Is that dual booting?
Something similar.
Okay. All right.
Except without the beer. Well, I suppose you could have the beer.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
It depends, right.
Whatever you want. So dual booting, getting back to the technical part of it, what dual booting is where you have a computer that has one operating system installed on it, and you install a second operating system on it, and you're able to switch between the two. So there are a number of ways to dual boot, and technically speaking, I suppose that you could consider a virtual machine as dual booting, but generally what's meant by dual booting is where you have one or more hard drives, and the two or more operating systems are installed on either its own hard drive or a separate partition or section of the hard drive that's dedicated for that particular operating system. So to put an example to this, if you're on a Windows machine, you could have Windows installed in one part of the hard drive, and you could have Linux installed in another part of the hard drive. Similarly with Mac, you could have OS X on one part of the hard drive, and you could have Linux on another part of the hard drive. And the question here is, should you be dual booting with Windows, or should you be dual booting with Mac? What are the other alternatives, and why would you want to do that?
Okay.
So why would you want to do that?
well, I mean, like in Tu's particular case, he wants to jump on he wants to jump in and start working with Linux because he's curious about it.
Right.
And his primary operating system, if he's a graphics designer, he's probably running on a Mac, you know, OS X, or he's running on, you know, or he's got a PC and he's running, you know, some Windows stuff.
Right. Yeah. Right, exactly. And he wants to continue to use Windows or Mac because he's got some things that he's used to using. And he wants to try out Linux and perhaps wants to begin to learn to use it. And if it's for him, he may want to continue to use it more often than the other operating system. Or perhaps there's something that would require him to use both, like perhaps he's a web designer or someone else may be a web designer and they want to be able to test their web pages on multiple operating systems as well as multiple browsers to make sure that everything is working and functioning properly, or they want to test their purchase site, you know, shopping cart, make sure it works under alternative operating systems as well. So lots of different reasons for wanting to dual boot, not the least of which is to give Linux a try because you haven't tried it before.
And actually, you know, there was something else that with the whole dual booting thing is that commits part of your hard drive. That's something else that we do. I think Ubuntu with its latest release did away with the Wubi.
Yes.
Or did they bring that back? Which is so sad because what Wubi was it let you create a partition, not even a partition. It let you create a Linux experience on your Windows machine by just, you know, developing a file structure within Windows for it to read. You know, and that was really, really cool. And they did away with it. But what I've actually told everyone is, you know, the Linux has this beautiful, beautiful ability to let you try before you buy, basically.
Yeah.
You know, it lets you run it on a live CD. And
you're buying it.
Huh?
And it's not for sale. I mean.
You're not buying it. Well, it's a metaphor. Yeah. You know, you can put Linux, you can't do this with any other operating system. You can put Linux on a CD or a DVD and boot your computer from it. And
use it as a fully functional operating system.
Yeah, completely. Like completely self-sustained and it's all right there. But what I've always recommended to people is because that experience has been rather crappy depending on your system.
Yeah.
You know, reading the CD-ROM and everything else. I tell them to create the live USB drives, which lets you get the same thing, but you can actually, if you use some of the tools built into these things, you can actually create what's called a persistence. Which means it's now not only is a live operating system, it's a live operating system that saves your customization. So you can get all of the feel, you can find out what's going on, you can see how it's working, how everything's going on, and you can turn around and be like, oh, well, I don't want to do it anymore, yank, reboot.
Right, mm-hmm. And imagine that, an entire computer operating system running from a USB stick that's as small as 2 gigabytes in size. If you can find one that small these days.
I know. I was actually just thinking that the other day. I'm flipping through my box of old drives, and I'm like, where is, like, all I need is a 2 gigger. Because I was doing an install, and I'm like, all I need is a 2 gigger. I don't have 4, 16, 32. What in the world?
No,
and then
you
finally,
can't even order them directly from China these days.
Wow, man. It's like, oh, no. Yep,
I think they all got bought up by the advertising companies.
Right?
Yeah, they put their logo on it and some trial software and some viruses, and away you go.
Some viruses.
Well,
since we're talking about alternatives and they brought it up, there's another alternative that we haven't mentioned yet.
Viruses?
No, from running Linux, dual booting, okay? And there's another alternative, and that is, at least on the Mac, you can run both simultaneously. With a product called Parallels.
You can that's virtual VMing. That's virtual machining.
Yeah. A virtual machine. That's exactly right.
But Parallels is so much more sophisticated than the average VM. I mean, because you can run it concurrently. You can run it in such a way that you don't even know which operating system you're in. Basically, you just have one desktop and you can run Mac stuff or you can run Linux stuff and you don't even know. I mean, there's many, many different ways Parallels allows you to run, alternative operating systems at the same time.
Right. And the VirtualBox, which is an Oracle product these days, it used to be Sun Microsystems. Now it's been purchased by Oracle, and they provide it for free. It does something similar to Parallels. I've used VirtualBox on a Windows XP machine in what they call seamless mode, and it gives you the same experience. You can run Linux applications in the Windows XP windows. They even have the Fisher-Price interface around the window decorations and that sort of stuff. So VirtualBox can do the same thing. I'm sure VMware, one of the other most popular virtual machine software, can do that as well. And whether you have the host machine being Windows or Mac or Linux, you can run all other operating systems inside that virtual machine on the host machine, and so you can run multiple operating systems simultaneously. And the difference between running a virtual machine and running a dual boot system is that in a dual boot system, you actually log off of one operating system and then log back on to the other. You use one at a time. Well, in a virtual machine environment, you can do that as well, but you can also switch between the two, and mm-hmm. it is actually using both operating systems are using a portion of your RAM, your hard drive, your processor, and so on simultaneously. So they're actually running at the same time.
All right, listen, we're at the bottom of the hour break, and we're going to continue on. By the way, also with the alternative is that when you dual boot, you can actually have to reboot your system to run the other operating system.
Yes.
Where the term dual boot comes from. Hey, we've got our London Minute. We've got lots more coming up. This is the Computer America Show. We'll be right back. And welcome back to the Computer America Show. I guess Charles isn't there. we are talking to Larry Bushy. Larry is the host of the Going Linux podcast, and it's our All Linux Show. And we're doing right now answering the question, should I dual boot Linux with Windows or Mac? And the question, I think, is the answer to that question is yes. There's no reason why you shouldn't, right?
Yeah. There's no reason not to. But there are alternatives that you might want to try first.
Yeah, exactly. And I had mentioned Parallels. I use Parallels on the Mac, and it's wonderful because I can run concurrently run Windows along with the Mac OS X. Although I have to say that I find really no reason left to run Windows. I mean, I do have it. But
oh, that was the perfect statement to come back to. There is no reason left to run Windows.
We should record that, I think.
I think we got it on multiple
over
different occasions.
Over and over.
There's no application that I need on Windows. I used to have a couple of legacy programs that I absolutely had and was only available on Windows at the time, and it was the only way I could run it was using Parallels. But now I don't have that need that anymore, and so I find myself. I mean, I still have Parallels. I think it's a wonderful program, and I think everybody should have it. But the point is, I haven't used it now in quite some time because I just don't need Windows for when I'm in my everyday.
I feel like I need to be making tally marks for the number of times we bash Windows on this show.
Let's be a little more positive then, Charles. So you and I have to gang up on Craig and get him to trash that alternative operating system that he has on there and put Linux on there instead in Parallels.
Well, he would have absolutely no use for Linux because, you know, one, you got to be the cool person.
Yeah, that's true.
We've got to get him in there, but you know we're working, maybe
we can get him cool yet.
I got to make a little tick now for every time he insults the host.
I'm not insulting. It's just cool people. And yeah. I mean she's doing really good. We made it to the 35-minute mark, and he hasn't mentioned his phone once.
We might 5S, right?
You're what? I missed that.
I was just using them a little while ago. I think about it sometimes.
Now here's what's funny though. Like he's still kind of that cool kid cousin though. He's cool by association because he runs Mac, and OS X is OS X.
Yeah.
Since the beginning of OS X, it has been a Unix variant. So it's. You know.
It's been cool since then.
Yes.
Yeah. It's been cool since.
OS 9 was the last vestige of the old operating system. Then we went to, and it was interesting because we all got to watch, you know, the death grip, the OS 9, you know, then they finally got it, so it only ran with the Intel base, and they then took off the, they kept taking more and more, the classic, they had the classic version of it, then they finally got rid of that, you know, so it's sort of like the old show notes.
Eventually it will go away.
Let them go. Go by.
Yeah, and everyone will be using Linux. But anyway.
Yeah.
Someday. Someday we can hope.
You know, it's something we will have to figure out.
When all the Windows machines grind to a halt with viruses, the only thing that will be left will be OS X and Linux.
There you go.
Actually, I have a feeling that Windows is about to come out with something crazy. You know, they've got their only corner market right now mostly is the enterprise market. And even there, people are alternates. You know, I mean, like, we're an all Linux, you know, shop here. You know, so you can't get, you're not going to find anything Windows here. You know, I mean, we had one box that we had Windows on, specifically so we could pull hardware notes on it, and it just happened to be running Windows. I think it was the box that I built for Craig when we were testing out, you know, setups for the show. And it's been sitting idle doing nothing, and we put it on a monitor, and it popped up Windows, and everybody in this office was like, oh dear God, no, goodbye. You know, we were like compromised, you know, and we make jokes on Windows, but Windows has been running our enterprises for years. And I think it's time for them. They're going to be a late adopter, and they're going to evolve, and I would not be surprised to see them hit up a major fundamental change of the operating system coming up in the next couple of years.
Well, what I'm hoping is they adopt a Unix base, same as everybody else, and eliminate that whole virus stuff that they've got going on.
Yeah. But then companies like McAfee and
McAfee.
McAfee and
OS X.
It does that just to piss me off, you know?
Well, I got away with it earlier today, if you noticed. I called it OS X, and Larry, you jumped in like perfectly. Because yeah. I know Craig's OCD kicked in, and he was like, I'm a kid. And then show stuff happened, and he was like, okay, I forgot what I was upset about. And then he came back, you know.
So yeah, at least we're not saying Linux instead of Linux.
I'm going to start calling Charles Tyndale rather than Charles Tyndale.
Well, that would be wrong.
You don't mess with a man's name. But anyway,
it's GNU/Linux.
It's man's name. That's it. Don't mess with it.
There you go. So back to our topic.
Oh yeah, we were talking about something.
So we've talked about live CDs or live USB sticks as an alternative. We've talked about running a virtual machine. Yeah. Of course, another alternative would be to install Linux on a second computer if you're lucky enough to have one, or two or three, like most of the people on this conversation right now. Another alternative is not to dual boot at all, but to completely eliminate your existing operating system and replace it with Linux. Now, that's for the brave. That's for the people who have been running it for a little while, or for the people who like to jump in with both feet with no net. How many metaphors can I mix here? That's it.
I mean, if people who want to be completely immersed in an opportunity. I mean, like way back when I first switched over to Mac, and it was actually, I actually did a YouTube video on it because I got my first, I think it was my Pro that I got at that point. And I loved it. I was like, oh my goodness, it's fast, it's fluid, it's moving. And it stayed pretty stable for a number of years. And that Pro is still hanging out in a closet somewhere. Mm-hmm. You know, it's around here somewhere. And it's because it's a good machine, you know, and I liked it. But it started to get quirky and buggy and, you know, the hype was just, it died off. But, you know, Mac, I mean, for the switch over, when I switched, because before then I was half Linux, half Windows, and then switched to all Mac. And I mean, I went everything Mac, like, you know, iPhone, iPad, you know, iPicture frame, everything.
Yeah.
You know, and
now you're an iHacker.
And now I'm an iHacker, you know, yeah. And you know, the only reason the Mac got resurrected was because of all the show stuff and the things that we do with the show. So, you know, it's actually entertaining. I've got a KVM that connects my Mini. And the audio that's being pumped from my Mini is going into my Linux machine that's actually running the live broadcast, the video portion. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a beautiful little setup. It's relatively simple and it works great. And I find myself the only time, and this is Craig's fault, the only time I'm actually on the Mac is when I'm doing the show or when I'm doing Photoshop, because there's no Photoshop for Linux.
Right.
I want to know why you're not wearing one of your T-shirts that has the slogan on it. You're wearing an actual dress shirt.
Yeah, I didn't have time to change. Fox literally left 20 minutes before the show, and I had so much other stuff going on. I was like, oh, man.
Okay, so, no, yeah. Charles wants to do a new contest based upon what kind of T-shirt, what his T-shirt says. So.
Yeah.
And we'll do that. But
no. And it's going to be a simple contest. It's really going to be, what did Charles's shirt say on insert date?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And,
yes. And you have to watch every single episode to be able to
exactly
know it. Yes. Yes. There you
exactly.
Go.
Or rewatch it out on the YouTube channel. Or we should probably start posting those up on the website.
Yeah.
Like have a past Computer America, you know, video shows so that we have it all up there.
Okay, well.
But don't put the dates.
Something to strive for. In the meantime, we are talking about should I dual boot Linux with Windows or Mac? And so basically, we talked about the alternatives, but what are some of the considerations here?
Good segue. What I was going to say was it really depends on your usage.
Yes.
You know, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You know, like, two, he sounds like a graphic designer. It might be a lot of work to get over to Linux because he's so used to his Photoshop and things like that. And he wants to get away from viruses. It might be more practical for him to switch over to Mac to be able to get, you know, the pseudo Linux style, but still be able to maintain the programs that he wants.
Well, now, of course, that's changing too because, you know, as you know, Adobe is going to the cloud and it might not matter anymore as to what
it might not matter
what operating system you're working on, because if it's internet based and you're using your browser to do everything,
that and the fact that when these companies do move their applications to the cloud, sometimes they change the user interface so much that what you knew on your former operating system doesn't apply to the cloud based application, and you're learning something new anyway. Maybe it's just as much, just as easy to switch everything over to Linux, and you can use that cloud-based application if you want to under Linux and protect yourself from viruses and spyware and all the other nasties that are out there by virtue of the fact that you're running a significantly less vulnerable operating system.
Yeah, it's just another consideration, you know, as Marmalade.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, while we're on this topic of cloud, one of the things that I ended up getting, yay me, for Christmas was a Chromebook.
Yay!
And as a result, I have been doing so much stuff in the cloud lately that it's almost. I'm wondering, why do I need an operating system based application? There are plenty of answers to that where you would need one, but because there's not everything in the cloud, but for my day-to-day work, I can use my Chromebook, and it's light, it's fast, it's got lots of battery life, and I can get to everything that I need. So I got the Samsung, what they call Chromebook, no model, just Chromebook. Yeah,
nice.
12-inch, nice, just what I needed for carrying around. Yeah, a little silver jobby. Nice.
So let's talk about these considerations. One of the considerations is a backup, making backup.
Yeah, so if you are going to dual boot, bear in mind that you are messing with your hard drive. And whenever you mess with your hard drive, make a backup. And if you think you don't need a backup, make one anyway. And if you've made a backup, make another one just in case. Because when you mess with your hard drive, chances are you're going to lose your data. And so if you don't have a backup, you may end up having to reinstall the operating system that you started with. Now, what's the risk of that happening with your typical Linux install? Pretty unlikely. But you may just be the person who has 10 years worth of photos that aren't backed up anywhere.
Ooh.
You try out Linux and it wipes your hard drive because you chose the replace my operating system option instead of the use this alongside my operating system option, and you go and you're, you know.
That's not good.
Not good.
The end-all story behind that is then the significant other who was looking for those pictures finds you. And, you know, then we hear about, you know, local insert city here, man beaten to death for dual-booting Linux.
Yes. Linux causes man's death. Yes.
Oh, man. That would be just the wrongest.
Yeah.
That'd be horrible.
Not good.
Don't do it, Craig. Don't do it.
Yeah. So another consideration is that you're going to be faced with something called a partition if you are dual booting. And what a partition is not something scary. It is just taking your hard drive and dividing it in bits. And those bits can be divided in half for Windows or half for Mac and half for Linux. Or you can decide that Linux needs more than half or Windows needs more than half. And you can decide how big is each partition. But each operating system has its own little partition of the hard drive. And if you need some information on partitioning or how to partition, we have some great information on our website. We've got stuff on our in the show notes with links to information about how to partition. We've got a video on there about step-by-step walking you through partitioning your hard drive. But when you install Linux, if you're doing a dual boot and all you want to do is try out Linux, for most Linux distributions, it will do the partitioning for you. Just pick the right option and tell it that you want to use Linux alongside your existing operating system, click next, and half an hour later you've got a Linux system up and running with all of the software applications you need for mail, for word processing, for spreadsheets, for playing games, everything already pre-installed. So,
now, Larry, did you ever, I'm sure you've seen it, the infographic or the comic strip where it says, you know, install, the first one is like install Windows, install operating system, locate driver disk, then it goes install useful tools, system crash, format, reinstall, rinse and repeat, and then it goes to the Mac one, it goes, you know, turn on your computer, upgrade RAM, install, wait for Apple to install all of its fluffy stuff, to get in there, remove it, install Office, get to work. And then with Linux, it was like install Linux, get to work.
Yeah. Yes, I've seen that one. Yes.
Install Linux, get to work.
That's the way it goes. That's exactly the way it goes. So, now another thing to consider, perhaps you've considered Linux and, installing it on new computers. Let's say you've got a brand new Windows 8 computer. You may have heard that it's difficult to install Linux on a brand new Windows 8 computer.
Is it?
Yeah, is it? Well, it depends. Yeah, it really depends. So some of the Windows 8 computers.
UEFI?
UEFI, yes. That is something
the
that
universal
they
universal nightmare
yeah,
electronic
that.
Fighting that. Instrument. And, yeah.
Yeah, and if they've added on Secure Boot on top of that, it's more of a nightmare. So. So UEFI is something new that, it's been around for a long time. Mac uses EFI as well, and has for a number of years. But Windows computers, Microsoft has almost forced this down the throat of computer manufacturers, and they have almost also forced Secure Boot down the throat of computer manufacturers. And as a result, installing Linux on an operating system that had a bootloader from the olden days was really simple. And when they switched to UEFI, they changed the way that computers boot. And Microsoft, bless their hearts, was trying to make Windows more secure by ensuring that there was this software called Secure Boot that runs on UEFI-based computers that would help prevent, in theory, your computer from being attacked by what they call a rootkit, a nasty infection that actually runs before you even boot into Windows. So what they successfully did, though, was make it difficult for you to install anything except Windows 8 on that computer. And the people who are writing these nasty things have gotten around that whole secure boot thing. So what we recommend is if your computer has secure boot and you can boot into the UEFI, I'm just going to call it a bootloader because that's what most people will call it, there will be a selection there somewhere. It'll be variously named that allows you to turn off UEFI. And once you do that, you should be able to, with a modern Linux distribution, just install from the CD or the USB stick. If you're using an older version of Linux, you may have to jump through some hoops. We've got some of that hoop jumping instructions in the show notes, and you might want to refer to that. But my recommendation is if you're going to try to install Linux on a brand new Windows 8 and pre-installed computer, consider something else, or make sure you're using the latest version of Ubuntu or Linux Mint or Fedora or something that has the tools pre-built into Linux to handle the UEFI bootloader. And similar sort of considerations for the Mac. There are some instructions in our show notes for installing Linux on the Mac. There are a couple of things you have to do that you don't have to do on Windows. Not difficult, but
isn't there a native Linux version for the Mac, right?
Yeah, so
What did you just say, Craig?
there are native Linux versions for PowerPC.
Oh, which aren't around anymore. Okay.
Yes, but the Intel-based Macs that use the EFI for bootloading, you have to install something called REFIT, refit, that before you can install Linux. And it's easy to do. There are instructions in the show notes. Don't let it intimidate you. It's pretty straightforward. And if you need help, my friend Nightwise over in Belgium can help you. He's got his own podcast.
But then again, of course, you can also just run Parallels and then run it concurrently with it and then have to do it.
Which is why you might not want to dual boot on the Mac.
I used to have on my Pro, that was something else that I loved. I did a lot of virtualization even back then. And there you could configure Parallels to key switch to like – super something else left or right and switch over to your other operating system. I loved that. I mean, I loved just the quick keystroke and I'm in a different operating system, rocking it out, having a good time and quick keystroke and I'm back in the other one. And it was great because it was seamless. It was easy. It was fast. I liked it. I really did.
You can still do that. Matter of fact, they have so many different ways. You can, it'll actually take the whole screen and it'll make it look like it's a giant cube and it'll rotate. And so that's that face of the cube is that.
You know where they got that from, right?
Yeah, exactly. Where?
Linux.
Uh-huh. Linux developed the rotating cube in what was called Compiz.
Yeah.
And, I mean, this little guy, it was bad. You could do the 3D rotating cube with all of your workspaces, which is also something that Apple stole from Linux.
Yeah, and you can still do it with the different users. You can still have the rotating cube if you want.
Sure, sure.
It's great.
You can do it with the
I could do that on my Linux in 2000 and, what, 5?
Wait. So they have that. Then of course,
and it's funny. Those Linux users stopped doing that.
Well, yeah. The thing is that also with Parallels, you can go to any corner and then it'll kind of bend up like a page and you can click in it and go to the other operating system that way too.
He's not going to give up, Charles.
No.
He's not. He's going to keep going. He's going to be like, Mac rules.
Yeah.
Mac rules. And I do have to give it to him, you know, because he is a radio personality. He is a studio guy. You know, Mac is, and this is funny. Larry, have you watched any of the videos from CES over on the Computer America page?
I have not. Shame on me.
Yeah.
Fail. You should fix that.
I will fix that. Right after this, I'm going to spend 4 hours watching all those videos.
They're great videos. They're not even that long. They're all like a couple of minutes long. But
we had some guy who was just picked up a microphone and started interviewing people.
Yeah, it was weird. You know, and my wife followed him around. I was kind of depressed about that. It's Mac is a, and this is something I was telling somebody earlier today. Mac and Apple, they what they do is they identify what it is that they want to do, and they go to do that perfect.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, I love my Android, I love my Linux operating systems, I love everything else, but like Linux does a lot of things very good. Mac, you know, does, you know, things like video and audio and graphics design and stuff like that. Perfect.
Yeah.
You know, that and that's what they did. It's just like the iPhone. You know, even Craig's gold iPhone 5S, you know, it does picture taking. Gold plated, you know, it does picture taking perfect. It makes phone calls perfect. It, you know, text message, everything that it does perfect, and it does it 100%. Like all those videos on the website, those were all done on my iPad Air.
Mm-hmm.
They were shot, you know, edited and uploaded straight from my iPad Air.
Really?
And, you know, until I told Craig, he was like, what?
Yeah, that's
well, you know what? Linux strives for excellence and Mac strives for perfection.
Exactly.
And Windows strives for marginally adequate.
Yeah.
That's it, you know. Linux is trying to do I've got a KVM with a Mac Mini that is decked out, 16 gigs of RAM, is completely maxed out. Solid state drive, it's completely maxed out. It is a fast little box. But I spend more time in my Linux environment because Linux, for one reason or another, is so resource light that it's fast. You know, it's responsive. It's like premonition fast, like almost kind of scary.
Right, exactly. Yep. I just noticed something in the chat room. Fort says, UEFI and Secure Boot are two great reasons to use older computers.
Yep.
You're listening to Computer America. Computers run the world, and we run computers. Call us or send us an email to live@computeramerica.com.
Hello and welcome into hour two of the nation's longest-running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. This is the Computer America Show, and I'm your host, Craig Crossman.
And I'm your co-host, Charles Tindall.
And we're continuing on our All Linux Show with Larry Bushy. He is the creator of the Going Linux podcast. And we just finished up our topic on dual booting your computer and why you should do that with Linux. And we're going to change gears now. We're going to move into the next hour. And again, you can follow along with us. Just go to our show notes page at computeramerica.com, and you can see today's show. And just click on the link there that says email for this. And that's how you can see everything that we're doing in this hour. Again, though, if you have a question or comment about Linux or have anything having to do with Linux, certainly you should call us at 347-884-8881. That's 347-884-8881. I'll get you through. Again, you can listen to everything that we're doing here on the Computer America Show right here at blogtalkradio.com. You can just click on the Blog Talk Radio logo and listen to us there, or you can click on the Boost Radio Network and listen to us live on the Boost Radio Network, or you can just go to boostradionetwork.com. It's all there and all waiting for you at computeramerica.com. All the links, everything you need to know there. We also have our CES videos and, of course, the live interactive add-on chat room. And it's interesting. What happened? Did you stop the video? I haven't looked at it.
No, I didn't stop the video.
All right, there you're back again. Okay.
Well, I was just sitting really still.
Yeah.
See, watch. I'm going to make it glitch. Watch.
No, don't make it glitch. I won't see it in 30 seconds.
Robot.
Robot, exactly.
Ready to go, robot.
Yeah. All right, so we're going to continue on with this email for the show. And Uva, wrote a letter to an email there, and it says, and he says that he's, oh my gosh, he's done with Linux? What?
That's what he says. I thought I would start with a controversial email.
Fox News, eat your heart out.
All right. So Uwe wrote, hi, Larry and Bill. Bill, for those new listeners, is my co-host on the Going Linux podcast. Uwe writes, I listened to your podcast concerning dual booting. Yes, we did a whole episode on dual booting some weeks ago. I installed Lubuntu on a VIO netbook alongside with Win7 Starter. I'm sorry. Lubuntu did not work as expected. Even over 70 posts in the forum did not help. Instead of getting things done, I am done. Installing was quite easy, but to delete this OS seems to be a problem. Now I even spend time in finding information. Could you please tell me where I can find a step-by-step guide to accomplish this task? Was it a topic in your podcasts? During boot up, GNU Grub version 2.0-19 Ubuntu 2.1 with Lubuntu, Windows 7, Memtest, and so on are displayed. I posted this problem regarding uninstallation in a Linux forum, but the suggestion there was not feasible for me as a beginner.
Now wait, I want to understand. Maybe there's more to this.
There is.
It's the Grub instance that he's upset about?
Yeah, I think what it is, he's trying to uninstall Linux, and he ends up with Grub, you know. And so he got stuck
with Grub. I get it.
Yeah, so now he can't get back into Windows 7. He doesn't know how to get rid of Grub. So he's messing around with the Linux forums, and they're probably telling him that he should probably put Linux back on there, knowing people in the Linux forums. But anyway, continuing with his email. There were topics like deleting partitions and so on, but not what I was looking for. Googling around resulted in a few suggestions, but I am not sure about the trustworthiness, and I do not want to mess up my netbook. I'm a beginner, therefore I have to mention this. Kind regards, Uwe. And before we could even answer, he wrote back another email where he said he had found his own solution. He says, hello, some further research done in YouTube too. A few videos applied Easy BCD for this purpose. And that is a great recommendation. Easy BCD is a nice tool for recovering and allowing you to remove bootloaders, but also to it's an alternative bootloader for Windows as well. It was pretty easy, and Lubuntu is deleted, Grub included. So Windows boots immediately again. Another software for this purpose is MiniTool Partition Wizard Home. I used only the former one, though. So, Uwe, thanks for those suggestions. I have never heard of MiniTool Partition Wizard Home. Have you, Charles? Is that a new one?
No. I mean, anytime I've ever run into partition issues, I use Gparted.
Yep.
Or in Windows, I can't remember what it is. Partition Magic, that's what it is.
Yes, exactly. But EasyBCD is a nice tool that is a bootloader. And so when you install it, it removes Grub and puts a bootloader in there and allows you to remove former installations of whatever else you've got installed on there. And it just boots into the BCD, Easy BCD bootloader. And if all you've got on there is Windows, you probably won't notice much, if any, of a difference between the native Windows boot or the Easy BCD boot.
So he actually removed. So he removed Linux.
Yeah, he didn't want it. It's not for everyone. It's not for everyone, and especially on netbooks. You know, the early version netbooks that were very, very underpowered. Even some of those wouldn't. Linux couldn't handle it, and Windows 7 Starter is probably the only thing they could install. And Sony, that makes the VIO that he was using, They have a lot of proprietary hardware in their systems, so I'm not surprised that that Linux was giving him fits and starts. So hopefully someday he gets a real computer and gives Linux another go.
Okay. Well, there it is, Uwe. All right. All right. Well, let's go to the next email from Tom. And he's filling us in on something called Zorin OS.
Yeah. So on the podcast, we've had some discussions about Zorin OS, and I think we've talked about it here on Computer America as well. Tom writes, "Hello, Larry and Bill. I have been a faithful podcast listener for about 2.5 years now, and I love the show. I wanted to comment on your listener feedback episode 228, in which Robert asks a question about Zorin OS. My first distro was Zorin OS version 5. I have distro hopped around and have a couple of distros on my computers. Dual booting, probably. My main Linux desktop is Zorin OS version 6. My experience with Zorin OS has been very good. I have only used the, quote, core version, which is the free version. Now, I have to depart from his email here for a second and say that Zorin offers a free version, and they try very hard to get you to go with their paid upgrade version. Yeah. No need to do that. You can use Zorin OS free version if you wish, but they've got some nice features that are very attractive on their paid version. If you find the value, you can go ahead and purchase it from them. Continuing on with Tom's email. From what I understand, the other versions, Premium, Ultimate, etc., are paid versions, but most of the extras you get from those versions can be added to the core version just by using the Software Center. Not in my experience, Tom. The exception is Zorin Look Changer, which has more options in the paid version. The Zorin Look Changer is just basically a group of desktop themes. My experience with Zorin has been different than your experience. I have never been asked to pay for anything. I agree with your assessment that in order to get support from Zorin directly from the Zorin developers, you need to pay for the premium version. However, Zorin is based on Ubuntu, and I have found that any issues can be solved by querying the Ubuntu forums. There is also a Zorin forum that has been helpful to me as well. The Zorin forum is free. Well, so is the Ubuntu forum. With regard to Robert's question about the Software Center, Zorin uses the Ubuntu Software Center for its repository of software. At least in version 6 it does, which is based on Ubuntu 12.04 and is a long-term support release. Maybe something has changed with the more recent versions of Zorin OS, which I have not tried, but I believe that Robert was using Zorin OS 6.3, which should have the Ubuntu Software Center already installed on the distro. Thanks for reading this email, and I look forward, as always, to your excellent content. Best regards, Tom. And the question that Tom is referring to here that Robert was asking was, how do I install the Software Center on Zorin OS? So we at the podcast were a little bit confused as to why he would want to do that, since it has its own Software Center. And from what Tom is telling us, it actually uses the Ubuntu Software Center. So I'm still puzzled as to what Robert was trying to do.
Well, I mean, which distro was he using again?
Zorin OS, based on Ubuntu.
What happens a lot of times with these offshoots of the OSs is they turn around, they try to include their own package management system, which is just silly. You know, I mean, I know Linux Mint did it, and they came out with their package repositories, which 50% of are Ubuntu repositories, but they hold back stuff. You know, they want to test, they want to do their own thing.
Sure.
So, I mean, maybe that's a problem. I mean, you know how if you're installing something and you're like, if you're like me, you like command lines, and I run apt-get all the time. And everybody always tells me that's going to confuse the package manager. And when you do, it's only happened to me a couple of times where I do break the package manager, where it tells me dpackage can't run and all those other great things. So maybe that's what happened.
Well, that may be it. And, you know, the command line only breaks the package manager if you don't always use the command line. So, you know, stick with one thing and everything works just fine. But yeah, you're right. Maybe that's what it is. I don't know. We haven't heard back from him. So hopefully he's resolved the issue. Well, we have heard back from him and he's swapped to another distributions. So maybe that problem has gone away.
Yeah. Okay. Well, but at least you got his problem solved.
Yeah, we hope so anyway.
All right. So you want to move on to Victor?
Sure.
Who won't get Scroogled? What is Scroogled? What do you mean Scroogled?
Well, let's read his email and let's find out. So Victor writes, "Hi Larry and Bill. It's been a long time since I've written to you. Anyway, Microsoft is spreading FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt, on Chromebooks, saying they are bricks without internet, and they're not real laptops without Windows and Office." And he provides us a link to the Microsoft Scroogled website. And it's in our show notes, of course. He continues, "The folks at howtogeek.com wrote a rebuttal on behalf of the Chromebooks." We have a link to that as well for your reading pleasure. If this is worth mentioning on either the Computer America show or Going Linux, that would be great. Thanks for reading and best wishes to you and Bill. So now, getting back to Scroogled. Scroogled is a Microsoft ad campaign where they have taken the stars of some very popular television shows like the Pawn Stars show, and a lady comes into the pawn shop and brings in her Chromebook that she's gotten as a gift, and she wants to pawn it, and the Pawn Stars are telling her, this isn't really a real computer. It doesn't even have Windows. It doesn't even have Office.
That's the definition of a real computer, huh?
In their opinion, it is. And they call it a brick. It really doesn't do much. They accuse her of getting Scroogled, rhyming with Google, of course. And they have a series of these, and you can go onto their website, and you can watch the ads. And if you go to the How to Geek rebuttal, what becomes very obvious, and to us in the Linux world, it was very obvious to begin with, is the fact that this is really giving a lot of publicity to the Google Chromebook that it might not already have, because now Microsoft is positioning Google as its competitor, and people have come up to me at a computer store where I've been looking at the Chromebook before Christmas and said, "What is that? That doesn't look like Windows." And I've said to them, "Have you watched the Scroogled ads? Oh yeah, that's that Chromebook thing. Maybe I should give that a try."
Larry, did you read Google's response to Microsoft doing this?
I don't remember whether I read Google's response. Enlighten me. Maybe I'll remember.
We did actually a computer technology news episode on it some time back. And Google didn't respond directly to Microsoft. They weren't like, "Oh, you guys want to play games." So they didn't go back. Microsoft is basically poking the bear, and they came out with the "Don't Get Scroogled" t-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't get Scroogled t-shirt, and Google's response was, "Way to go, Microsoft, for jumping into the wearable technology market feet first." I read that and was like, "Go Google!" Google, in the comparison of Microsoft, you've only been around a fraction of the time, and for you to be like, "Oh, that's cute," and just leave it be, just says to me that Google has become the powerhouse. I mean, they are a verb. You know, you now are told to Google things. But,
yes.
You know, I think it's entertaining, you know. And you know, of all the people Microsoft would take aim at, Google would have been the last one I would have thought. So it works in the favor of both of them for marketing. The Chromebook is getting press, and Microsoft is getting press for poking the bear.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, at the bottom of the article from How to Geek, one of the things that they mention is that Windows should watch what it says, because if you look at the Windows RT tablet, it doesn't run Office either.
No, it does not.
Well, then you can't install Windows programs on it either.
They run a special version.
They did it with the RT and came out with the, remember when they came out with the, what do they call that thing? The Slate 2? too.
Yeah, yeah. Which is very similar to the HP convertible tablet that I had back in 2001. Something like that.
I mean,
except
honestly,
it's a lot lighter.
Can we honestly see a future without Microsoft?
I don't know. They keep stepping on their own feet, maybe.
I mean, honestly, I mean, they still run the majority of enterprises, and until we see the enterprise, I mean, it's like BlackBerry. Like, everybody's like, BlackBerry's dying. No. The DOD still, you know, they might as well just become a government company because the DOD still owns them. They still capitalize on that security market. In fact, there was a news story recently where what was it, 800,000 BlackBerry devices for the Department of Defense. Like, well, I don't think that they're not competing in the consumer market. They may not be able to survive. But do you honestly think the government paid retail prices for those phones? No, they paid $1 million each. So BlackBerry's going to survive. And what, you know, Microsoft's in the same position. While consumers have switched to alternate operating systems like OS X and, you know, Linux, you know, Microsoft is still there. I mean, like, I still run.
Got it in.
Yeah, I know.
Oh man, I almost made it too.
almost.
But, you know, I mean, on my Mac installation, I've got my Microsoft Office, and so does Craig.
Mm-hmm. You
know, but he's got it on his OS X installation.
And
I'm using equal parts of LibreOffice and Google Docs and spreadsheets these days, or Google Drive, as they call it.
Google Docs.
By the way, did you read the last part of that email? You know, if this is worth mentioning?
Yes, I did.
You did read that. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we got right to the end.
Okay,
so, it's, as far as Office is concerned, if you really want to run Microsoft Office on your Windows RT tablet or your Google Chromebook or your Linux machine or your Mac, and you don't want to fork over the money for the version of it, or you can't install it, use the cloud-based Office program and fork over your money that way if you wish. Yeah.
Now, let me just give you a heads up here. Charles is going to possibly be leaving the show at the bottom of the half hour because you're going to Virginia.
I'm getting on a plane.
Getting on a plane.
Hopefully none of my team is actually listening to this because I don't know whether you guys know this or not. I run a consumer cybersecurity company, and it's actually called Consumer Cybersecurity. Mm-hmm. And my sales team is in Virginia. And, you know, I am going to Virginia this week to do the undercover boss thing because they've never actually met me in person, but I think they've watched some of my videos, so it might be, you know, a moot point. But I'm going to go show up on them, and we are going to do some talking, and we're going to do some team meetings. But I'm looking at the weather and everything else that's going on. And, yeah, I'm looking at it right now, and I'm like, I need to get going. And get everything hooked up because I have a feeling that halfway there we're going to get the message that says, you know, your flight has been canceled because this weird polar vortex thing has frozen the entire East Coast.
Yeah.
So I don't know. What do you guys – is it snowing where you are?
No, not now. It was earlier today, but it stopped.
But it's North Carolina snow, so it's only like a half an inch, right? It's not like Colorado snow.
It didn't stick. Nothing. There's no – I mean, nothing stuck. It just whatever fell down melted, so –
Yeah. And Larry, you're East Coast too, aren't you?
No, I'm in California. It's gotten really, really cold here. It's gotten down to, at night it gets down to into the 50s.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah.
It's complete freezing temperature. I'm so sorry.
In California, freezing rain is when it's raining and people walk outside and they go, oh, it's freezing out here.
Yeah,
that's freezing rain.
It's cold. Yeah. You know what? Let me pull up my net atmo.
Yeah, in Florida, it dipped down to 75, you know. So
it's 30 degrees here right now. It is 1 degree above freezing.
Yeah, okay.
Right now.
Yeah. Well, as I said, it didn't stick. So now I haven't looked at the temperature recently, so I'm not sure what's going on there. But you know, in the interim, so you're going to leave at the bottom of the hour, Charles, or are you going to stick? What are you going to do?
Well, I am counting down. I was planning on leaving in about 3 minutes.
Yeah. All right. So you want us to do that? You'll leave in 3 minutes, and then And then we'll just see you tomorrow.
Yep. And actually, for those of you guys who are enjoying the stream, thank you for my loyal viewers and the people who are actually going to the YouTube channel to watch it. Thank you. You know, we would definitely need to get these up on the Computer America website to be an alternative for them to be able to watch the watch and listen to the show. I know I might not be that entertaining to listen to, but I try. And it is a great way to do it. I will be broadcasting from Virginia for the week, so I won't have the high-speed Logitech HD camera, and I won't have my typical mic, so I will be using the actual camera on one of my laptops. So you actually get to stare into my eyes as we do the broadcast.
But you're bringing your good-quality headset and computer, so we...
Definitely. I might mess with you just a little bit and use my really crappy headphones.
Oh, don't. I got enough stress.
Yeah, you know, I was messing with my wife earlier today. She's got this ridiculous OCD, like little things. So I'm gonna buy the picture of the Leaning Tower of Pisa, right? And I'm gonna make the frame straight, or make the picture straight so that the tower itself is completely vertical, and the frame will be crooked. So there's no win scenario here. Like if that's up on the wall, my wife's gonna freak out. So it's gonna be great.
Exactly.
You're a mean man.
Yeah,
I'm not. No, she is the one who comes into my office and unplugs my peripherals.
Ah, no, that's mean. Exactly.
Or just like she's done it once where she just turned them off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm like, why is this not working? Battery and stage, what's going on? And I flip them over, and the switch was off, and she had put a sticker on there that said, "I love you more than."
Nice. That's cool.
Yeah, exactly.
I might have to get her on the show because, you know.
I can't. If my wife ever did that, I would, because it's so unexpected, I wouldn't, you know, that would just.
You know what? If your wife is listening, what's your wife's name?
Cynthia.
Cynthia, if you were listening to this show, I would so love you if you were to just write, like 20 minutes before the show, just unplug something that Craig is not expecting. He would, I don't know if you've been married to him, I don't know how long, and I know that you've heard him panic, but that is the most entertaining thing. Larry, you should go here before the show. When Craig panics, it is like one thing will go wrong, one big thing will go wrong. And then from that point on, it's like any tiny little,
it's all downhill from there. Yeah. Yep.
Inadvertently put a period at the beginning of a sentence, and he freaks out. It is the most entertaining thing in the world to listen to. I mean, you know, I love him. You know, I think it's going to be a long and prosperous partnership. I'm going to go out of my way to torture this man.
That's fine. You're on Fox News, or you're going to go on, going to be on Fox?
Well, I was on Fox News local here, KDVR. Probably will be rebroadcast to Fox News Channel nationwide. I will be on Fox News Chicago tomorrow morning, their Good Day Chicago show.
We had to find a creative way for you to get to mention that you are now a host on Computer America.
I'm trying to do that, but I'm also promoting my own business, so it's really hard to mix the two. You know, actually, now that I think about it, I will probably email the reporter from tonight and be like, if the viewers want to get special tips, they can get involved by calling insert Computer America phone number here.
Yeah.
During these times, or listening to our show where we talk about these kind of topics. Right now, the hot thing is the Target hack.
Yes, and say Computer America rather than our show. Just say, call Computer America. Substitute Computer America for a show.
I will try. Trust me.
Try to get one plug-in. Yeah, exactly.
I've been doing news stories with these guys for about 4 years, and they love me. And over the course of the 4 years, I think I've only done the shameless plug probably 3 times.
Okay. Well, you're about due.
So now I've earned it all. So now I can just throw it out there over and over again. And I've got to do consumer cybersecurity, and I've got to do Computer America in the same sentence.
All right, you've got to do it. And then let me know where I can see it so I can watch it.
Actually, you'll be able to watch the rebroadcast at kdvr.com.
Okay.
They usually feature my stuff on the main page. Or if you wait, you can see it on charlestendell.com on the main page on the right-hand side. There's my YouTube channel gets updated with the videos.
Okay, good. All right. All right.
We'll give you the clicks.
Okay, so you said
I'm telling you, Craig, he'll listen to me eventually, and he'll start posting all of these videos on the video page of ComputerAmerica.com, and we will suddenly go from no videos to a million.
We can do that. Absolutely. All right. Well, listen. So, are you going to split? Or are you going to stay to the bottom of the hour?
I'm going to give you another minute or two, and then I've got to go because we've got. Like I said, I don't know whether you guys have been paying attention to the weather. My flight has not been canceled yet for one reason or another. I booked the red eye flight and I really don't know why.
They're going to wait until you leave. They're listening to the show and when they hear that you've left the studio, then they'll cancel it.
I know. That's exactly what's going to happen. You know what will happen even worse is I will get to the airport. I will get to the turnpike for the airport and Google Glass will notify me and say, your flight's been canceled. And I will be like, you little.
It's a family show, Charles. It's a family show.
Exactly.
There you go. Now we put it all together. You little.
No. You
missed it.
Do it again.
Okay. You little.
All right. So we're going to continue on here, and we're doing, of course, these emails from Larry Bushy, and these are emails that they've written to you. Because they have questions about Linux and they either hear it on the Going Linux podcast or they hear Larry here on the Computer America show. And, we're going to continue on with those. I think, Charles, why don't you, we're getting ready to go to the bottom of the hour break.
Right. You're going to go to the break from Patricia Reichel. You come back with a Linden Minute and I will be gone. Yep. So for everyone, Adve, Akwevare, hail and farewell. I will catch you again tomorrow night on the Computer America show from Virginia.
All right. Okay, that's what we'll do. All right, so we're going to take a break here on the show, and then we're going to have a brand new Linden Minute from Patricia Reichel that's coming up on this
hour two,
yeah, of the Computer America show. And Charles Tintel is going to continue on with us from Virginia, and maybe he'll give us a plug during his...
I will try really hard to get you in on the Chicago show.
That's it. That's the one that counts. All right. 347-884-8881. We'll get you on and get you through. We'll be back with the last half hour of the Computer America show. I'll be right back.
This is your London Minute, brought to you by UpDesk, the creators of ergonomic, height-adjustable, stand-up desks. Go to updesk.com to raise your standards. Are you a digital native? Take my quiz. 1. You use your smartphone's self-facing camera like a handy pocket mirror. 2. You can return the Apple earpods back into their case neatly under 15 seconds, the way the Apple product designer Kurt Steele intended. 3. You fondly remember what WIMP stands for. 4. You're comfortable with blue screens of death. 5. Your phone's full of selfies. 6. You like mashups like FaceTube and Interweb. 7. You confidently weave hashtags into everyday conversation. 8. You know your pop from your IMAP. 9. You check your smartphone is in your pocket at least 8 times a day. And finally, 10. Your heart skips a beat when it's missing. If you said yes to at least 7 out of 10, congratulations, you're a digital native. Tweet me your number to @ComputerTweety. This is Patricia Reichel for Computer America.
Yeah, I've just been tweeted. welcome back to the Computer America show. It's just Larry Bushy and myself. Charles has abandoned ships. And is off, headed toward, winging his way toward Virginia, hopefully.
It just doesn't seem the same without him, does it, Craig?
It doesn't.
Certainly the video is a lot darker.
Yes, it is. But...
it's gone off.
Exactly. It's going to just recirculate, I think, after a short period of time. I think if you start up now, it actually goes back to...
The beginning,
right. It does, it kind of loops. And then every day, and then when we come on the next show, we start a new one. Although, as he said, we may not have it for the rest of the week. He's going to experiment and see what he can do. But, you know, he's not new to doing the show remotely because he just got back, you know, from the Consumer Electronics Show. He was out there all week and he had his act together and did a really good job. So I have every confidence that he's going to do a good job. And,
well, as long as he has a good pair of, iPhone earbuds with him, that should work just fine, right?
Right. Exactly. It would be nice if we can get a plug on the Fox News and
Chicago. Oh, that'd be great, wouldn't it?
But yeah, it'll be great. So we'll see what he can do it, you know. I mean, after all, if he's promoting us, you know, he's promoting himself too. So
yep.
That works. So anyway, it's just you and me. As I said, I'm going to finish up doing these emails. And again, you can read them. Just go to our show notes from ComputerAmerica.com. It's under the archives pull down menu. Go to the show notes page and click it. And it's you'll see the Today Show, January 21st. And you'll see email, the link there. Just click it. And you can read everything and see all the links. It just makes for a smoother experience. And again, if you want to call in, you certainly can. 347-884-1. Only when we're live on the air, Monday through Friday, from 10 p.m. to midnight. It's Computer Delight from 10 until midnight Eastern Time. 347-884-8881. We'll get you on and get you through. So let's continue on with this next one, which is it says, co-host Bill discovered that his new computer came with UEFI and Secure Boot, but with Secure Boot disabled. And evidently, Ben made a comment.
Yeah, Ben made a very brief comment. He said, "Hi guys, I think the NSA technician should be fired. They forgot to properly restore UEFI on Bill's new laptop before they messed with it." I'm joking. I hope. So thanks for that, Ben. Interesting comment.
Now, Gus, this one provided a suggestion after you mentioned that you would switch from Record My Desktop to Kazam. Okay.
Yeah, and this is for making instructional videos. Record My Desktop has been around for years and years and years, and stopped working on the latest upgrade of Linux Mint to Mint 16, and I think it's because of the changes they made to the desktop environment. It was originally designed for the GNOME desktop, and Linux Mint stopped using GNOME as its basis or made significant changes enough that it stopped working properly. So I searched around for a little bit, and Kazam hasn't been around as long, but it is certainly just as functional. So Gus responded to that whole comment on the show, and he said, "I've found a screen recorder through Chris Fisher of the Linux Action Show called Simple Screen Recorder. Mm-hmm. I like it a lot, and it has a bunch of features, and it's in the AUR, and there is a PPA for it." And I think it's the Ubuntu repositories that he's talking about here. And a PPA, by the way, is a personal package archive. It's kind of an add-on to the repository. We have a link in the show notes to an article on web update that talks about Simple Screen Recorder. It describes it as a powerful screen recording software for Linux. I have not given it a try, but they have some screenshots. It's obviously running on Ubuntu, and it looks very similar to Record My Desktop, and I would be surprised if it's not using some of the same technology in the back end to make this work. So give that a try if you're interested, and you can always use Kazam, as I'm doing. In the web update article, they give some instructions on how to add the PPA to your package archives and how to do the installation right from the command line, which is usually very quick, simple, and easy to do.
All right. Okay. So let's now move to Paul. Now, we had one person who got away from Linux, and now we have Paul who has gone Linux, but he's a little frustrated, right?
Yes, that's what he tells us anyway. He writes, "Hi, Larry and Bill. I have been using Linux for about 4 years, and I have really enjoyed the experience. I distro hopped at first, starting with SUSE, Mepis, and others." Don't these Linux distributions have great names? "I tried Ubuntu for a while until I started listening to the podcast and went with Linux Mint and have been using it for about 3 years. I wanted an alternative to Windows and the free operating system and software was too good to pass up. Plus, I didn't want to upgrade hardware just to load another Windows operating system. I need to do only limited things, Skype, word processing, spreadsheet, email, just the basics, and keep my older hardware. And that is the classic user for Linux, is the person who is just doing the basics. And when you switch over to Skype and word processing and spreadsheets and email, those are the things that work basically the way they work on Linux and on Windows and Mac. They all work the same, and it's a very familiar environment, so easy to switch. So continuing with Paul's email.
Mm-hmm.
I have become a little frustrated lately with the Linux world.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really no longer interested in keeping up with a six-month release schedule. So most of the Linux distributions, most of the modern ones, most of the most popular ones, release new versions every 6 months. You don't have to upgrade every time, guys. So Paul continues, I used Windows XP for years, and it served the basics I needed. Now that I'm in the Linux world, I have learned at least some of the ropes to navigate the operating system and apps. I don't want to do a refresh install of the operating system every 6 months, only to have to learn what's new and fix what's broken. And yes, I understand there is an LTS, long-term support release, but I had trouble with Linux Mint 13, the long-term support release, most recent one for Linux. I spent way too long trying to figure out how some network printer issues that turned out to be bugs in the operating system. So I can't understand why an LTS isn't smoother to work with, but maybe the next LTS will be. Also, the six-month release cycle makes it difficult to support a new Linux user. I wish a distro like Linux Mint would release every 2 years or so and support a great operating system in the meantime. Are there any Linux users out there that share my opinion? Thanks for the podcast. I learned something with every program you release, Paul, in the Dallas, Texas area.
All right.
And thanks, Paul. So, to talk about this whole release cycle for Linux Mint, Ubuntu started, I think, they may not have been the first, but it's the first one that I realized was releasing a new version, an upgrade, if you will, to their previous version every 6 months. Imagine that, if Windows would provide a release every 6 months. It would be a nightmare, especially if they reintroduce a whole new user interface like they did with Windows 8. But Linux Mint and Ubuntu derivatives oftentimes do that. But every year or maybe every 2 years, depending on what the distribution is, they will have what they call a long-term support release. And what that means is the interim releases, the ones between the long-term support releases, are really supported until the next release. And maybe a little bit longer. But the long-term support releases are supported by the developers of that Linux distribution through till the next long-term support release. And quite often what happens is when you install a long-term support release, one of the things that Linux distributions do is they tell you when there's a new upgrade available, not just to the applications, but to the operating system itself, and oftentimes offer to install it for you, especially on distributions like Ubuntu. Mm-hmm. And the Ubuntu upgrades go pretty smoothly. If you install one of the interim releases, it's going to prompt you every time there's a new interim release, so every 6 months. But with a long-term support release, if you've got that installed, it's only going to prompt you for an upgrade when the next long-term support release comes out.
Mm.
So, Paul, although you realize that there are long-term support releases, that's probably your best bet. And I know there are people out there in the Linux land that that agree with you that there should be longer spaces between releases, but you can go overboard on that as well. The folks at Debian that many distributions like Ubuntu and Mint are all based on. We talked earlier about Unix being the granddaddy of OS X and Linux. Well, Debian is kind of the granddaddy of Ubuntu and Linux Mint and Zorin and so on. And they release when they're ready. So there have been many, many years between releases of Debian, you know, stable releases, and there have been others, other distributions, similar sort of thing. So you can go overboard in that respect too.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on to John. And evidently, John is in virtual trouble.
Yes, indeed he is. So, John writes, "Hi, Larry and crew. I downloaded Mint, new version, wanted to try it since I'm on version 14. So, by the way, the latest version is 16, so he was only two behind. Since I'm running all my Linux in a virtual machine, it just works great. But now I can't do anything with the download. Won't see my CD-ROM drive. I can't burn an ISO or put it on an external drive. The downloaded image was in Mint, I guess is what he meant to say, which is in the virtual box. Is that the reason that I'm having trouble? I usually have done the ISOs in Windows before." Oh, I see what he's saying. So he's saying he used Linux Mint to do the download mm-hmm. in the virtual machine. So he's wondering if that's where his problem lies. Mm-hmm. Is there something I need in Mint to enable it to burn an ISO, or is it VirtualBox that's giving me the trouble? Thanks for help and suggestions, John in Dallas. And so I made a few suggestions by email to John and suggested that perhaps that he may need to configure VirtualBox to actually see his CD-ROM drive. So in the virtual machine, when you've got an optical drive or a USB port, it oftentimes doesn't see the actual hardware port. It will create a virtual port that you can use, or it will create a virtual CD-ROM drive that you can use to install things from. But in VirtualBox in particular, you can change some settings to actually have it recognize the hardware so that when you put a CD into the CD drive, it appears to the virtual machine like you put a CD in the CD drive of the operating system that's running in the virtual machine. It's actually pretty slick. So I walked him through that by email, he said, "No, that's not the problem. I've actually done that." And then finally, after a couple of exchanges, he wrote back and said, "Hi, Larry. I guess I messed up big time in Mint 14 trying to find the download. So I downloaded again in Windows as normal, as I've normally done. Made a DVD and things worked fine. I like Mint 16, really clean and fast. Finally, found a way to delete previous extension packs in VirtualBox," and extension packs are the things that enable recognition of the hardware devices. "That was the main problem. The new version wouldn't install, but I probably will never need USB support in Mint anyway. It's nice to solve a problem, though. Always learning something new. That's what Linux is all about, isn't it? Thanks for your kind response and help." And in answer to one of the questions that's kind of implied in John's email here, which is, was there something that he did downloading the image in Mint and trying to burn it from within the virtual machine? I doubt that that was the issue. I really think that perhaps when it downloaded, it didn't download correctly, or perhaps his internet connection glitched or something, and he ended up with a bad copy of the software that he was trying to install. Now, one of the things you can do, Craig, with one of these images, if you suspect that that's a problem, there's a on the website where you do the download, there's something called an MD5 sum or an MD5 check. And that MD5 is kind of a an encrypted signature of the quality of the file. Mm-hmm. And so after you have downloaded a file like this, and before you burn it into a DVD or a CD or a USB stick for installation, you can run an MD5 checker utility. Search for it under Windows or under Linux, and you'll find one that's suitable. And it will check the MD5 sum of the image you have. And if the numbers match exactly, you can be absolutely certain that you've got a good, clean copy of that CD image, so that when you burn it, it's going to burn and install correctly. If the numbers don't match, then it's become corrupted somehow, and generally I would recommend downloading another copy, because what you've got may or may not work.
Yeah. Well, sometimes you have to do that, you know?
Yeah, exactly. You've got to check it out first. And so, John, good luck with your virtual machine, and hopefully you stay out of virtual trouble. Sorry for the bad puns.
Virtual.
But hey, we don't shy away from bad puns here.
No, we don't. No, not like well, we have one last email that I want to get to. It's a short one, but it's from Tony. He's using Mint 16, and he's looking for monitor help.
Yeah, and I think Tony's in our chat room still looking for that monitor help. So let's let's take a look at his email first. And Tony, if you can call in.
Yeah.
Because we can help you on the phone here. I know you're listening.
Yeah, 347-884-8881. Give us a call, Tony. Go ahead.
Yeah. So I know folks in the chat room are trying to help, but here's his email. Hi, Larry. I have a brand new computer. I'm using Panasonic 50-inch plasma as my monitor. What a wonderful monitor that is. Can't get the resolution to come in. Any suggestions? Tony. So, Tony, I haven't added this to the show notes, but I'm going to do it right after we're finished here, I think. And I'm going to put it in the chat room right now. There is a link to Ubuntu.com article or tutorial, if you will, on setting up dual monitors on your computer. And there are some manual things you can do. A lot of times when you're connecting through an HDMI port to these kinds of monitors, you have to install, you have to hook them up with an HDMI port. Sometimes HDMI isn't supported all that well in some of the older versions of Linux. Now, you're on Linux Mint 16, and it should have the HDMI support there. So I don't think that's a problem. Your computer, though, if it has Windows installed, you said it was brand new and you still have Windows, what I'd be interested in knowing is, does it work with Windows? And if it works with Windows, then we can, then we've got something to work with. And we know that it should work under Linux. And if your computer is purchased with Linux on it, don't worry, we can still get it working. It just, that would be a diagnostic thing that we could do to find out, is it working? Now, the other thing is, if it's not working under Windows, perhaps you've got one of these HDMI cables that's audio, or not a cable, but HDMI ports that are audio only. Now, I don't know why a computer manufacturer would do that, but I have run across a couple of computers where the HDMI port, for some reason, didn't support video. And I'm still not sure whether it was a faulty HDMI port or maybe bent pins or who knows what, but the only thing that I and the other people helping could get working on it was audio. And even, you know, trying different operating systems, different versions of Linux, we even tried the original Windows, and it just flat out wouldn't work. Sometimes it's the monitor. Sometimes the monitor can cause some problems there as well, and maybe the resolution isn't supported by your video card. Under Windows, you're out of luck. Under Linux, there are some things that you can do, and that article that I linked to can give you some suggestions as to where to go and some of the things that you might want to try. I've got some other tricks up my sleeve, Tony, if you'll give us a call or you write back or you put more stuff in the chat room, we can help you. We just need some more information.
Yeah, and we're fast running out of time. We have like about 4 minutes left.
Yeah, so calling in may not be an option right now.
Well, exactly. I don't know why people are so reluctant to call the show sometimes. You know,
I don't know. Sometimes we get a few, and sometimes, some shows we've had none. So,
yeah, they want to stumble around in the chat room, which is fine, but, you know, conversation speaking is a lot faster than typing in everything.
But hey, to each his own. I mean, some people are, computer geeks, they don't like this personal interaction stuff, you know?
Like, he just wants to, you know, be a loner, and that's fine. I can understand that.
Yeah, he's out there in New Jersey, and he's covered with snow right now, from what I understand.
Oh, gosh. I hate these vortexes.
Yeah.
it's just awful.
Tony says he's shy.
Yeah, I see that. Great. That's just great. All right. So we have about 4 minutes. So tell us a little bit what's going on with the Going Linux podcast. What's coming up next, and what are some of your plans for the podcast, Larry?
Okay, well, we're getting much more into videos, and we have a video that I created recently, and we're not talking about the kind of videos that Charles makes. We're talking about instructional tutorial type videos. We've got 7 up on our website. Dating back to 2009. Wow. The first 5 were from 2009. I did one last year, and I've done one so far this year. But we're getting into more of this. And so the most recent one was back a little while ago. It says January 24th. I don't believe that date. But it was earlier on this month. I've got to fix the date on the website. It's about partitioning your hard drive. So we were talking about dual booting. Mm-hmm. We've got actually 2 audio podcast episodes on dual booting, and then this video is to support that for people who want to do some manual partitioning. We've got an upcoming episode that Jack Deff in the chat room is responsible for. He did all of the show notes for us. He made the suggestion about the topic, and what? We did an audio podcast on it, and I've got an article coming up on our website as well. So thank you, Troy, his real name, Jack Deff, in the chat room. Thank what? You so much for that.
A grand slam for Jack Deff, huh?
There you go.
Yeah, exactly. And all those and all these are upcoming as well. So.
Yeah. So the partitioning the hard drive video is already up there. The 2 previous episodes on how to dual boot, step by step instructions, and a lot of discussion between Bill and myself are there already. And the upcoming episodes are the ones the article from courtesy of Jack Deff, and the next episode, which will follow hot on the heels of the rebroadcast of this episode of Computer America, will be right there, and it will be the audio version of the article that we got the help from Jack Deff on.
Yeah, and it's as I mentioned, it's been 6 years now that Larry's been doing the Linux shows with us here at Computer America, and it's always a pleasure and always having you here with us.
Yeah, I have to say as well that one of the upcoming things is after 6 years, we're finally going to put a link to Computer America on the Going Linux website. So I promise you, Craig, when the episode goes up, the logo goes up. It'll be there.
Yeah, but I'm expecting to see a logo up somewhere on the homepage because that's
yeah, on the homepage about 3/4, you know, taking up the top half of the screen, maybe. How's that?
That sounds great.
We'll get it there. Maybe not that big, but it'll be there.
Exactly.
90 seconds.
It's the link that counts.
Yeah.
Hey, I want to thank you so much for being here on tonight's show. Again, it's always
my
a pleasure to have you here on the program.
Theme music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.